This is Sarah Weymouth, and welcome to my podcast, where we talk about everything for you to live your best life. And we have a little fun too, from talking about business, marriage, parenthood, money, health, home decor, friendship, beauty, and pop culture. I'm a mother to three, a wife, a successful business owner, and I want to live my highest best self. Follow along as we learn together, grow, teach, because you only get to live one life. Oh, and I promise to dig deeper and to ask the tough questions. This is the Lime Podcast. Jessica, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. For those that don't know, I've known you for a little bit. Our boys used to play baseball together and I would see you at the field all the time, but I didn't even know you were a sleep expert until I think after the season was completely over. So will you tell us a little bit about you and how did you even get into all of this?
Yeah. Well, hello, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me on. As you were saying, it is so nice to see you because it's been forever because I haven't been at the baseball field for a long time.
You'll have to come back next season.
I know for sure. So I am a sleep coach. At some point, we eventually got on that topic when we were talking. Or no, you figured it out, I think, through my husband.
I think it was like on Instagram. Yeah. So, okay. You could tell the people your husband's a comedian. What's his name again?
Right. Steve Byrne.
Okay. Yes. And he's hilarious, by the way. And I followed him and then he did something and like tagged you in it. Like he was like making fun of you or something.
Yeah. Sounds right.
And I was like, wait, what is this? It says like my dreamy sleeper or something, you know? And I was like, wait, you're a sleep expert. So yeah, that's how I found out.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Whenever people tell me that they know my husband or have seen his comedy, I'm like, oh gosh, what have you seen?
Hilarious.
So you asked how I got started and how I got into this. So we were living in California at the time. That's also a connection that you and I have. Mm-hmm. And we had just had our first child, and she is my strong-willed and sensitive one. I saw it at 6 weeks. I'm like, you are going to give me a run for my money. Yeah. I know it.
Isn't it funny how you see their personalities so early?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it has not changed. She's 12 and a half, and that is her. I saw it at 6 weeks, which, you know, made parenting, especially this is my first time, right? It's my first daughter. It was hard. And I was struggling and I was sleep deprived and my husband was sleep deprived and he was working. He just like work at that point was so busy. He was working really long days
he travels a lot too, right?
He travels a ton. Yeah. At the time we were in one place, he had a local job that he was doing, but he did have a trip coming up where he was going to be gone for 3 weeks. And I'm like, what? You're going to leave me with this baby for 3 weeks? Are you kidding me? And you know, we're not sleeping. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I can look back now and say, I definitely think I was dealing with some postpartum anxiety. And for anyone who is any mothers who have dealt with that or like postpartum depression, when you are sleep deprived, it only fuels those feelings of anxiety and depression. Yeah. And so I was definitely struggling. My husband and I, you know, we were, I will say, very just disconnected at that time. It was hard. So anyways, we had very close friends of ours who had hired a sleep consultant. Their daughter is 18 months older than our daughter. And so we got to see the work in action. We got to see their daughter become this wonderful, easy, predictable sleeper. And they then, so generously gifted us a consultation as like a baby shower gift. Mm-hmm. And so we met with this sleep consultant and we worked on Olivia's sleep, and oh my goodness, she would go to sleep at like 7 o'clock and she would sleep through the night and she'd wake up at like 6 or 6:30.
And mother's dream.
I look back over, because my husband, as you said, he travels a lot. I needed that predictability. I was exhausted from solo parenting a lot. I needed to know that my child would go to sleep, she would sleep through the night and I would be able to sleep too. Mm-hmm. And when that started happening consistently, it was so life-changing. Like my strong-willed, sensitive little one, she became just a little bit easier to parent.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't fix this the strong personality by any means, yeah. But it just made things a little bit easier for me. And it was so life-changing. You know, my husband and I both started sleeping. We were able to reconnect. We had time for one another because we knew our daughter would go to bed at 7. We could hang out. So then fast forward, we had a second child and we hired this woman back and everything was great. And then when our son was about 9 months, she reached out to me and asked if I would want to join her team. And I'm like, yes. I'm like, wait, let me talk to my husband first. Yeah. And then he's like, yeah, do it. So I flew to Canada. And I began my training there and I had ongoing training for about, gosh, it was like a year, year and a half. I started working with infants and then kind of moved to newborns and then started working with toddlers and preschoolers. And now today, fast forward 8 years later, I have my own business and I work with newborns, usually up to age 8. However, with some of the older elementary kids, if I think that I can help them, I will help them. So like I have an 11-year-old right now who lives in California who I'm helping. Yeah. But it's just, I love what I do so much because I get to be a part of a family's life during the most like special time in their parenting journey. You know, it's just so cool to be there and be a part of it for a short time.
Okay. Love that. So let's start with the beginning. So first stage is newborn stage, obviously. What are your do's, don't do's, tips? I know they're so sleepy at that stage anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, a lot of us don't work on sleep as a newborn. We're dealing with other things. And I always tell families the most important thing when you first have a baby is number one, you have to adjust to your new family dynamic. You know, we're going from a 2-person family to now 3, or a 3-person family to now 4. That's huge. You have to spend time just getting used to that and getting into your new norm. The second most important thing, even more important really than that, is you have to work on feeding. You have to make sure feeding is going well. Whether you're breastfeeding or you're bottle feeding, that is the priority, because if you're having any kind of issues, if you're having any kind of digestive struggles, you have to work on that because you're not going to get anywhere with sleep, mm-hmm. you know? But there definitely are things you can do as early as, you know, the first few weeks, the first month of life. I always have to be really clear with parents, like working on sleep as a newborn is not sleep training.
Right.
It is not, that is not appropriate. It is not safe.
Yeah.
But it's more about implementing just healthy habits. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to build a foundation for your little one to make sleep easier over time. So you can start implementing routines. Like, it's never too early to implement a bedtime routine or a little mini nap routine, because for your newborn, the more you continue to do that day after day, night after night, it will eventually become a cue for them.
Yeah.
It'll cue their brain and their body that sleep is near, and it'll help just to make things a little bit easier. The other thing I try to tell newborn parents is, try really hard to work on getting full feeds in your baby, which I know is hard to do because I always say avoid them falling asleep while they feed, which is impossible, especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
But you really do want to try to get a really good full feed in the little one, because the hope then is that they can get the majority of their calories in during their wakeful hours during the day and then not need quite as many at night.
Right.
Again, as they're getting older.
Well, they do longer stretches. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. What about a lot of people say like their baby comes and it's their night and day is flip-flopped. What do you do in that scenario?
Oh, it's so hard when that's the case.
Yeah.
But there definitely are babies where it seems like things are almost backwards, but that is because their circadian rhythm has not yet developed. Mm. And research shows that really doesn't fully develop until around like 2 months.
Oh, interesting.
And so there definitely are some things you can do to help your little one kind of understand their days and nights a little bit better. I like to have parents try to use light exposure, meaning in the morning when they wake up, take them to a well-lit room. Mm-hmm. Have their first feed happen in that well-lit room. Throughout the day, try to spend time there. Even if they, I mean, they can nap in like a living room environment, right? If it's safe and it's bright, that's fine for a newborn. And then at night, that's when they want to be in that darkened environment.
Yeah.
But you can also like cap their naps during the day. So I usually say, don't let a newborn sleep longer than nap. I should say nap. Don't let a newborn nap longer than 3 hours, but wake them even sooner if they need to feed again. So if at like 2.5 hours or even 2 hours, you really need to get another feed in them, then wake them up. Mm. It'll help to try to guide them in the direction their circadian rhythm is eventually going and help push some of those longer stretches to the nights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at what point are we considered not a newborn? Like, is that 2 months?
I usually say about 3 months because as far as sleep goes, the strategies that I would suggest, I usually have parents aim for like the 2 to 8 week mark for newborn work.
Mm-hmm.
8 weeks to till about 13 weeks, I was going to say, but even 12 weeks,
mm-hmm.
you kind of get in this place of like, oh, there's not a whole lot you can do right now that's going to be super effective.
Yeah.
And then once 3 months hits, if a family wants to really work on sleep, we can really focus on it. And that's when the shift changes to like, this is more of a sleep training scenario.
Got it. Okay. I actually sleep trained Mason at 4 months. And he was the perfect baby. Like I think it maybe took us 30 minutes. He cried. We went in there, we tapped his belly, whatever, came back out, like literally. And then he slept through the night and then was perfect.
Amazing.
But we tried to do the same thing with Rush when he was 4 months, did not work, didn't work at 5 months, didn't work at all. And he didn't sleep perfectly until he was like 14 months. So like,
isn't it always crazy how different our own children can be?
I agree. And that's what blew my mind. I'm like, same genetics, same parents, same routine, same sleep training, which I didn't know what I was doing. We just like read something online.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what you recommend. Is that how you sleep train?
I'm glad you brought that up because gosh, they can be, our own children can be so, so, so different. So this also will kind of talk about the three main methods you can use when it comes to sleep training. Okay. So it sounds like with Mason, you use Ferber or like a check method,
mm-hmm.
which is a really popular common method.
It was like the one where like, you don't pick them up, but you know, you let them know that you're there.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. And there's many variations of the check method. And it can be a really effective method for many babies for sure. But there are some where it's almost like the checks amp the child up more and can cause more crying. And that can be really challenging for parents. And so there are a few other options. The one that a lot of us think of when we think of sleep training is cry it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think of that as extinction, which I will say there are definitely some medical professionals where they just say, put your baby in the crib and walk out and don't go mm-hmm. back in.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't usually recommend that strategy, but I will say this, there are some children where taking an approach where you are not present is actually better for them. And you will actually see less crying.
Mm.
The problem with an extinction type method is a lot of us as parents, we're just not capable of following through because the doubt creeps in. We yeah. say, okay, I'm going to be really strong. I'm yeah. not going to go in there. It's they so are true. Fine. And we stand outside the door and we listen. And then, you know, 30 minutes goes by and we're like, oh my gosh, what if he pooped? Oh my gosh. Like, what if he rolled over and he can't get back, you know, all, oh gosh, what if he's, yeah. he's not feeling well? Yeah. What if he's teething or what if? And then we go in.
Yeah.
And whether it's we do a check or we pick them up or we change their diaper, when we go in and interact after that lengthy amount of crying, it has a tendency to reinforce the crying.
Interesting.
And then unfortunately, you will end up with more, which is obviously what we're trying to avoid. So extinction method can be tricky.
Yeah.
The Ferber method or checks, which is what you did, can definitely work with a lot of babies, but there are some where, again, like I said, it can cause more crying every time you go into the room. Mm. The method that I like to use, I call it a parent present approach, also known as the chair method, where a parent is in the room with the baby.
Okay.
And they are there offering comfort and support and reassurance to the child while they're trying to figure out how to go to sleep on their own.
Got it.
And then as the nights and days go on, we start to move further and further and further away from the child until you get to that night where you can do the routine, you can place them in the crib and you walk out and they'll go to sleep piece of cake. Mm. But I found that method, it can work for many personality traits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I a lot of times see the kiddos where parents would describe them as strong-willed and stubborn, sensitive. You know, those are often the kiddos that it's just harder to work on sleep and, quite frankly, harder to parent.
Yeah.
And so we need the help. Whereas, you know, the little ones where we would describe them as like easygoing or more chill or relaxed, flexible, adaptable, those kiddos, it's just usually a little bit easier, especially when it comes to sleep. And you can probably use a check method and it'll work really nicely for your child.
Yeah. That's how I felt between Mason and Rush. Mason was chill and happy, and Rush literally came into this world and was like, good luck with me. I mean, like, well, it's so funny. I also did the thing where you bring the baby home and they go right into their crib, into their own room. So I forgot to ask you that earlier. What do you tell parents around that? Because there's always a debate of co-sleeping or the crib or the bassinet or...
Right.
What was the other thing? The Dock-a-Tot. I had that with...
Yeah.
I had every device
everything.
With Rush because he was horrible. Mason had nothing and he was perfect. So I don't know.
Oh, yes. It's so funny. Okay. Well, I always say that this to families. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends keeping your child in your room until, you know, at least 6 months. Okay. I really say it's a personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on your comfort level, right? My first stayed in our room, oh gosh, probably until we sleep trained her at 4 months. She was in the room with us. My second, at 7 weeks, I'm like, you got to get out of here. I can't
yeah.
sleep.
I'm
You're
done with
loud.
This. Yeah.
You're waking me up, you know? And so he moved into his own space. It's really whatever you feel comfortable with. And of course, we're looking at the sleep environment as we need to set this up to be safe, right? So if they are in their own room and being placed in their crib, we don't want anything in the crib with them. They should be on a firm mattress, a fitted sheet. There should not be any blankets, no pillows, no stuffed animals. I don't like bumpers either.
Yeah.
None of that is recommended, right? There's nothing in the crib. You want, you know, good air circulation. I always tell families you want it to be a little bit more on the cooler side versus too warm.
Mm-hmm.
So research shows that a cooler environment is better, more conducive to sleep, really for everybody, adults, children,
yeah,
babies.
They do say that.
Yeah. So I recommend 65 to 68 degrees, which personally I think is freezing.
Yeah. I was going to say 69 is my low.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And it's really, again, it's like personal comfort, right? Yeah. You might keep your house on 70 or 71, but if you're in your PJs and in your bed under your covers and you feel comfortable, more than likely your baby is too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But you just want to avoid it getting too warm when they're, yeah, when they're sleeping in that space. But yeah, it's really what you feel comfortable with. I mean, today, you know, these days we have video monitors. We can see, yeah, them. We can hear them. I think back to when I was a baby and my mom would put me in my own room and she had just the noise. And that's, yeah, all. She, no, could just, seriously, listen to me.
Well, also we, our generation, didn't they put us on our stomach?
Yes, they put us on our stomachs.
And now they're like, no, they have to be on their back.
Right, onto the back.
And then, yes, we also swaddle. I don't think they swaddled us because we were on our stomach.
So I do, well, right. So if, exactly, Sarah, if they're on their tummy, we can't swaddle. That's not safe.
Yeah.
But now with this campaign of we put babies on their back to sleep, we swaddle them to keep the arms from flailing and, right, waking themselves up, right? Because we have that moral reflex.
Uh-huh.
And just a note on the swaddle, because I do recommend swaddling newborns. You want to make sure it's tight around the arms and torso, but it should be loose around the hips and legs.
Ooh, interesting.
There, okay, needs to be movement, yeah, in that area. But once your little ones show signs they're ready to roll, then we definitely have to get them out of the swaddle because it's not safe.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. And then they do like a sleep sack situation.
Right. Yes.
Which is funny, yes, too, because when we were kids, we had baby blankets.
I know.
Everything is so different.
I know. It is so different. It is so different.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on like Dock-a-Tot, the swing, the thing that vibrates, the thing that rocks them, like all those different machines you could buy? Like I remember one time with Rush running to Target. It was like 6 p.m. and I was like, I can't do another witching hour / nighttime. I'll buy anything. I'll spend hundreds of dollars if this, yeah, baby will sleep. Like what?
Yeah. I always thought that way about the Snoo, because I never had a Snoo with either of my kids, but my clients who have used the Snoo, I'm like, oh my goodness, it just seems like such a magical machine. Yeah. Okay. So here's the thing. I will say this. Some of these products, the American Academy of Pediatrics has come out and said, these are not meant for sleep.
Right.
Like I know the Dock-a-Tot has been used for sleep. It's actually not considered, right, safe.
And
for
I
sleep.
Literally had to use it for sleep for Rush for months.
And yeah.
You can't sleep without it. I'm like, what,
right,
do I do?
Well, right. Well, and Sarah, it's just like swings fall in that same category.
Yeah, I did. They're that not, too. I would leave same, him in the swing. Same. I would leave. I was like, he's sleeping. I am not touching him.
You know, it's interesting, Sarah. When I work with families before they hire me, I'll have a call with them just to like answer questions and talk through things and just make sure that we're a good fit. And I oftentimes feel like the calls are like confessionals from the mom. She's like, and I did this and they, yeah, were in the swing and I did, I know I'm not supposed to do that, but, yeah, and I'm like, listen, there is no judgment here. I have done everything you
we
just
understand.
Listed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get it. And that's the thing. We do what we can to get by. You know, we do what we can to get by. And so my stance on this to families is, if it's working for you and your baby is safe, then it's all good. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I definitely needed you. I needed like an expert to come in and like tell me what to do. We were like surviving. I'm like, what do, yeah, I do with this baby that doesn't sleep? And I had two under the age of two, and then Jack was like six. So it was like, it was a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, and that's the hard thing is for a lot of babies, parents often will think, and I thought this too, when I had Olivia and she was young, I assumed the wake-ups would eventually magically go away.
Totally.
In some ways they'll stop,
or
right?
Lessen somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. Or lessen or she'd grow out of it. Like, yeah, this can't last forever. And listen, there are some babies where that is the case. Again, I go back to, I would describe those little ones as flexible, easygoing, adaptable, just like your easier babies in general. Yeah. They probably are going to be able to pick up on that.
Yeah.
On their own or with little effort from parents, right? So it can be a little bit easier process. But for a lot of us, that's not really the case. And so we had something that used to work. So with my daughter, I used to, before we did the sleep training, yeah. I would hold her, I would rock her, she'd have a pacifier in, I'd pat her butt, and I'd sit and like bounce around the room like that until she was good and asleep.
Yeah.
And then I'd go try to transfer her, and she'd wake up the second her head like hit the bassinet, because she knew. She's like, no, I don't think so, mom. Yeah, those aren't your warm, comfy covers. Yeah. Exactly. But we can like get away with that for a while, right?
Right.
The problem becomes when that little strategy of ours doesn't work anymore.
Right.
Or you get to a place where you're like, these wake-ups aren't getting better. Right. Like she's still waking 2 and 3 times every single night, or bedtime is a challenge, or I'm dealing with early wakes, or goodness, these naps are so short, they won't get longer. When you're seeing all of those things happen, the thing then you have to do if you want it to get better is you have to teach your child how to sleep independently.
Yeah.
It's the way to fix all those things.
Totally. It's so funny you said the rocking thing. That's what we did with Jack. It was like rock, mm-hmm. rock. He'd cry a little and then he'd pass out. But I remember when I had Mason, my mom like scared me. She's like, don't rock. Don't have him in your bed. Like you have to make all these habits. So that's why I was like, okay, the baby's in the crib. Like I'm going to do everything perfect. And like, you know, like,
yeah.
But like we said earlier, it doesn't matter. Like they were completely different babies, even with totally the same different. Routine.
Yeah. And, you know, Sarah, there are some families who really prefer co-sleeping and they choose that right mm-hmm. for their family. And my stance is always like, look, if that works for you and everybody's sleeping, awesome. Keep doing it.
Right.
But if it stops working for someone in that bed because they're not getting sleep,
yeah.
then you might want to make some changes. Or quite often the parents I help who were co-sleeping, they get into the co-sleeping accidentally because they don't know what else to do.
It's like desperation.
And they're like, yeah, they're like, okay, we don't know how to get the child back out of our bed. That's what totally. We need help with. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. That was Rush. That was the Dock-a-Tot, and Rush came in our bed for a long time. It was horrible. Okay. So then what happens as they get older and we start to get to like the toddler stage and all that?
Yeah. Okay. So this is where it gets tricky if you run into sleep issues when your child is a toddler or preschooler is for those of us who worked on sleep when they were infants, you know, like you said, with Mason, you used this check method and it worked. Mm-hmm. The problem as a child gets older is strategies we used when they were an infant are not as effective anymore.
Yeah.
And so it can be really challenging if your toddler or preschooler is struggling with sleep. Add to that, they're now in a bed.
Yeah.
And they have this freedom.
Yeah. Come on out and come. And
yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And when they realize that freedom, you oftentimes get the popping out over and over and over and over and over and over and over. So the one tool that I always recommend to toddlers and preschoolers is to get a toddler clock or like a hatch light, some sort of visual for your child, not right. like an alarm clock. They're too young, you know, to yeah. understand the numbers and to deal with that, but a visual.
Right.
There's tons of products on the market, but you want something where at nighttime you have one color. Let's just yeah. say it's blue, right? Blue means sleepy time. Mm-hmm. And then in the morning it switches over to another color. And that means it's time to get out of bed.
Yeah.
It's nice for them to have that visual because they have no concept of time.
Totally.
They wake up, you know, in the middle of the night or at 4 a.m. and they think it's time to get up, but they need to be able to see that and know, Oh, not yet.
Yeah, I had that with Rush. It was red light for staying.
Yeah.
And then green light, you can come yeah. out. It's like a traffic.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, I will say the toddler clock or the hatch light, it's not going to fix everything if you have sleep problems, but it's a right. good tool to use. And you simply start by, if your child pops out of bed and that thing is not the color it's supposed to be, like in your case, it's not green, you have to walk them back over. Yeah. And over and over and over.
Yeah. You're right.
And over again.
So true.
Yeah.
It's mind numbing. Yeah. I'm like, the whole thing, I'm like, it's so funny talking to you. All this is coming back to me. I'm like, how did I survive?
Well, Sarah, we all that hard stuff, it's like we black out to it. It just fades away. We don't remember it. And that's how we end up with a second child and a third child, right? Because if we remembered every detail,
oh yeah, that was hard. Wait.
Yeah. Now I only remember it because this is what I do for a living now.
Right. You like analyze it every day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What about naps? Because I also specifically remember Mason being the best napper. Jack was really great too. And then Rush dropped naps pretty young. And I tried. I was like, nope, it's nap time. Nope, it's nap time. And he was just, he still to this day does not need as much sleep as anyone else.
I was going to ask, has Rush always been that kid where he needs less sleep than your 100%. Other children or on average?
He will go to bed last. He'll be in bed with books, but he'll go to bed last. He'll be the first one awake. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dropped a nap real early and I tried everything and then I gave up. I'm like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, look, and this is true of adults too. We all have different sleep needs, right? And some of us need more sleep. Some of us can survive on less sleep. When it comes to kids, when it comes to infants, toddlers and preschoolers, even elementary school age kids, most children will fall between 8 to 10 hours of sleep at night. Mm-hmm. The kiddos who need a lot of sleep, they're going to be closer to the 11 to 12 hour mark. Uh-huh. Kiddos who need less sleep tend to fall around 10 to 10 and a half hours. When kids are young, they're also napping during the day. So they're getting 10 to 12 hours at night, but they're getting their naps during the day. Children who tend to need less sleep in general, their naps tend to either be shorter or just total daytime sleep tends to be on the lower side, right? Yeah. Less than average. Those children also tend to go through nap transitions earlier. Mm-hmm. And in your case, they tend to drop their nap earlier in life.
Yeah.
You know, most
so early. I was like, is this normal?
How old was he?
I don't even remember now.
Was he two?
Probably. I know it's hard to remember. Isn't it like, I'm trying to remember. It was like, didn't they have two naps in morning and afternoon? And then don't they drop the afternoon and just have the morning?
Yeah. Okay. So
something
so
like that.
Yeah. The timeline goes like when they're, 3 and 4 months, they're probably taking four naps. When they hit about 5 and 6 months, they're down to three. Okay. Then usually around about 7 months, give or take, they'll be down to two naps.
Okay.
They stick to two naps until around 14 or 15 months on average. So they'll drop down to one. Mm-hmm. And then they're on that one nap until they show signs that they're ready to drop it. Most kids will show they don't need that nap anymore, somewhere between 2 and 3 years. I will say most kids are between 2.5 and 3. I have had some kids where they are older than three and still napping. And it seems like it's not negatively impacting their nighttime sleep. But when I hear of children who are like 3.5 and 4 years old still napping, I really wonder what's going on at night.
Oh, weird. Okay. So I feel like Mason napped 4 or 5 years old, but he was the
really?
Best. Yeah. But I swear. And then he like slept through the night.
Oh, wow.
I know. He likes sleep. I don't know. I honestly.
But see, Sarah, that would make sense. If Mason is a kid who needs more sleep in general,
yeah, he just likes
that sleep. Would make sense that he holds on to his nap longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny. Okay. So that's good to know on naps. What about, let's say we get a little bit older. You do a little bit of the school age kids. What do you usually see there? What usually helps? I would also think potty training kind of throws a wrench in there at some point. I know it's the younger kids, but I just thought of that.
Yeah, potty training can, but with most kids, they will potty train during the day first, and nighttime training usually comes later. Just because it's, muscles that need to be developed. And so I usually tell parents, don't worry about the nighttime stuff. Keep them in a diaper, keep them in a pull-up. Don't let's not add another thing when they're not truly ready to sleep in undies, right? Or to be getting up and going to the bathroom just once in the night. Parents can usually get through that relatively easily, but that is something that I do help parents with at times if they need help with the potty training. But then fast forward as kids get older. So usually working on sleep up until about age 6 or 7, typically it's a pretty straightforward process where we are just simply working on the behavioral side of sleep. A lot of these kids, most of them at this age, are either needing the parent to sit with them or lay with them for them to be able to fall asleep, mm-hmm. or they're co-sleeping with the parent. And so it's really about teaching the child to be able to sleep in their own bed, in their own room at night. And it is really a process where we're building their confidence, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of them either have never slept in their room all night long by themselves, or they just don't want to.
Yeah.
And they're being forced to by parents. And so we have to build up their confidence. We have to show them that this isn't as bad as you think it is. Look, you're doing it. You're really good at it. You're finding success. But it's relatively straightforward of just teaching them how to sleep on their own. Once you hit, for some kids, it can kick in at 7. I definitely have seen it with 8-year-olds. It's way more common with 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. You're oftentimes not just dealing with the behavioral side of sleep. You're also dealing with anxiety. Mm-hmm. You're also dealing with what seems like extreme fears when it comes to sleeping in their room, which can make the process a lot harder and take a lot longer.
Mm.
Because oftentimes these older kids have had some sort of sleep issue their whole life.
Mm.
And so when they come to me, I have to be very clear with parents and say, this is not going to be a quick fix.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like we make these changes and a week from now you're seeing a great sleeper.
Totally.
It's going to take us months to mm-hmm. get to that place.
Well, it's like you said earlier, like you're building these habits and routines.
Right.
And now you have to relearn that. It's so hard.
Right. Yeah. And you're up against anxiety.
Interesting.
Right? These kids are anxious when it comes to bed. They're anxious about being in their room at night. They're anxious because they just heard a noise and, oh my gosh, what is that? I can't be by myself. I have to be by my parents.
So is this just like scared of the dark? Like that sort
of thing? It definitely can be, but it's like, you know, so many of these kids, they have to have mom there or dad there, a parent there for them to be able to fall asleep.
Mm.
That is their sleep association. It's all they know. It's how they feel comfortable. And the thought of having to do that by themselves, because maybe parents have started having the conversation of like, hey, you know, we're going to start working on having you sleep in your own room. And they hear that and all of a sudden
panic.
The anxiety kicks in. It's like, no, I've never done that. I can't do it. I don't want to. It can be really challenging. And so I tell parents, I'm like, this is going to be like exposure therapy. Okay. When we're working on your child's sleep, they have this safe environment, which is their room. We're going to set up very clear expectations for your child that are attainable. Mm-hmm. We're going to tell them exactly what they have to do to succeed. We'll show them what they have to do to succeed. But we are there with them, supporting them through this period where it's going to feel uncomfortable. They're not going to like it. They are not going to want to do it. But we're going to hold them to it and we're going to be there for them. And they'll do it.
Totally.
And they're like, okay, I didn't like that, but I did it. And then we practice. And it starts to feel easier. And then we push again. It feels uncomfortable again. Oh, I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like this, but they do it. And then we practice. And then we push again. So it's this whole like practice, push. It's a very, very gradual process where you finally, you know, oh, down the road, you can get to this place where you give your child kisses and hugs. You tell them you love them. I will see you in the morning, and you can walk out of their room and they will go to sleep and sleep through the night.
Yeah.
And for those parents who for, you know, 8, 9, 10 years of their lives, they've never had that.
Oh, amazing.
They're willing to put in the work for a month or two or three, you know, to get that to that place.
Oh, that's so hard. I can't even imagine.
So hard.
So
So hard.
hard. What are your thoughts on sound machines?
Oh, I love this question. Okay. Because I kind of go against the norm. So I recommend sound machines for newborns. Great, right? We're trying to like mirror the being in the womb. Great tool to use. Once a child moves into infancy, and so I usually say around 3 or 4 months, I actually don't recommend the use of sound machines. And the reason for that is because we become dependent on them. And your child can learn to sleep without one. Plus, you really want your child to get used to the noises of the house, you know, so that you can do all the things you normally do and
Without
they'll be
like
able to
tiptoeing
sleep.
around.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
Yes. I
horrible.
had a family years ago, they used to watch TV muted with the closed captioning on. And I'm like, no,
Stop
we need to fix that
it.
for you. You need to make all your
Oh my
noises.
gosh.
So I say no noise machines. However, for me, it is not a deal breaker. So if a family says to me, no, we really want to use it, fine. I don't care. Use it. And there definitely are some scenarios where I actually recommend it, right? They have, a noisy sleep environment, or like some of my older kids, my 9, 10, 11-year-olds, it actually could be beneficial. You just want to make sure that it is on all night long. It should not be on a timer. And then I really like more constant sound. So you don't want there to be a lot of breaks, like waves. You want it to
Yeah.
be just constant all the
Like
way
just like a
through.
white noise.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's fun. All three of my kids use sound machines still.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, I use one.
I
And
know. I
I'm
feel like it's
dependent
like
on
a
it.
crutch. I know. Do you, yeah. Is it because of, oh, I think adults do it because someone snores, right? Normally.
Totally,
Or I
totally.
guess, like you said, if you get used to it. I know when we go on vacation, Mason will be like, I need my sound machine. And I'm like, you don't get a sound machine. Go to sleep.
Oh, that's so funny. Well,
But
some kids do get to a point where they're like, okay, no, I don't want that anymore. Some
oh,
do.
interesting.
Yeah, some
Okay.
do. My daughter was one of those because I did use one with her for a little bit and she's like, no, I don't want it anymore. I don't
Yeah.
want.
I can go either way. It doesn't bother me. I like silence though. I'm like just silent,
Well, see, I'm the
dark.
same, Sarah, but oh my gosh, if we travel and like we're all staying in a hotel room, I'm
Yeah.
like, crank that white noise. I
No,
don't want
you're
to hear
right. You're right. In
anybody.
that scenario, for sure. I'm trying to think. Okay, what do you have? I know you obviously mostly work with kids and babies. Do you have any like tips that also are good to know for like teens and us adults?
Yeah, because you know what? My older kids, I kind of pull. So I don't work with adults. I should say that. I don't work with adults. I've had many parents over the years ask me, hey, do you work with adults while you're helping my kid? I'm like, sorry, I can't help you with that. But, some of the strategies I use with older elementary kids are adult strategies. So, number one, I will say this. Timing is really important when you go to bed. If you lay down at night and you basically pass out, you went to bed too late. You should
Oh,
have gotten
yeah.
yourself in bed earlier. That's a sign across all ages that you went down way too late and your body actually needs more sleep. It's also really nice if we can wake up naturally in the morning without an alarm, but who as adults can do that?
Yeah.
I don't have time for that. Like, I have to get up and
Yeah.
get my kids to school. But
Right.
that's one thing. If bedtime has kind of gotten out of hand, like this is a really common thing for families in the summer, things get later, bedtimes get later, and then school is rolling around and we're like, oh my gosh, we've been going to bed at like 10:30 and now we need to
Right.
pull bedtime back to 9 o'clock. I like to use something called bedtime fading, where you gradually pull the bedtime earlier and earlier and earlier over time, as opposed to just saying, hey, tonight you're going to bed at 9. I know you've been going to bed at 10:30 and your body's used to it, but tonight you're going to go to bed at 9. Because for a lot of us, we will lay there and struggle to fall asleep. And then for those of us who get anxious because we can't fall asleep, it just creates more anxiety. And then it actually takes us even longer to fall asleep. So, when you use a bedtime fading approach, it's like, okay, we're used to 10:30. Tonight I'm going to try to aim for, I usually like to go by 15-minute increments. So like 10:15, let's aim for that for like 3 nights in a row or until we see success. Then let's bump it down to 10 o'clock. until we see success and we're falling asleep easily. And you just gradually keep moving it earlier and earlier. Another thing that's really, really important for adults, teenagers, and older kids is get off of your screen.
The blue light is so bad, right?
It's so bad. Yeah. It can really affect how we fall asleep and how we sleep in the night. Mm-hmm. So I usually advise for my kiddos I'm working with that they need to be off a screen at least an hour and a half before they're going to bed.
Yeah.
I mean, longer is better, but a minimum an hour and a half before they go to bed.
You know, there's actually a setting on the iPhone that you can take the blue light away.
Oh, and it really? Makes,
yeah. I forget what it's called. I should have looked before we started. It's, it gets like a little more yellow on the screen, but it still looks pretty normal. And I set it on a timer. So like from 8 p.m. through the whole night through 8 a.m., there's no blue light on my phone.
Oh, interesting.
But I should just take it off completely because honestly, it doesn't even look that different. Like it's just like a little more yellow tinted, but like that kind of stuff I feel like might help someone. But I know I usually watch TV though before I go to bed, which is like probably like the worst thing.
Me too, Sarah. Me too. Me too. I stay way too late watching TV.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I know. I'm like, what time is it? Oh, yeah. So they always tell us that we need 8 hours. Is that true? Is that what the goal is?
Again, we're all different, right? Some of us need more sleep and some of us need less sleep. But for adults, I think the normal range is kind of like that 7 to 9.
Interesting.
But there are some people who can function on 6.5. I am not one of those.
Yeah, I knew someone one time, I swear, he only did like 4 to 5 hours a night
was
totally fine. And I'm like, I would die.
Fine? Okay, fine. But thriving?
I don't know. I mean, we were young, so who knows now? But,
you know, I mean, children, even like teenagers, right? So if we're talking like older elementary, they still usually fall somewhere between 9 and 11.
Yeah.
And then like teenagers, they kind of shift to the 8 to 10.
Right. And but then teenage older, years, don't they also need more sleep? Like, don't they like start sleeping in and do that whole thing?
Well, yeah. And the hard thing is, and Sarah, you probably experience this. I know we do with sports, is we have the activities, the sporting, where we don't get home until 9 o'clock.
Right.
And then, you know, you're showering and trying to get to bed. And so I know for my daughter in particular, she is definitely not getting as much sleep as she needs to during the week. Mm-hmm. Luckily, she's kind of started catching up a little bit on the weekends, but not all kids can do that.
Yeah.
Not all of us are capable of trying to do that, like catch up sleep in.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even for a lot of us make a difference in our body and how we feel. So it's, I mean, there's studies, especially with adults, that it's like, if you lose the sleep, you've lost it.
Yeah. So you can quote unquote catch up, because I always wondered if that's like a real thing.
Well, it's interesting because I definitely see it with infants. Like when we work on sleep, if you have, and we're doing the sleep training and like naps are just crap that day, I advise parents to use an earlier bedtime that night. And we do that to help the child just catch up on sleep they didn't get during the day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll have babies, they'll sleep like 12 and a half hours straight, 13 hours. I had one little boy years ago, he slept 14 hours straight one night because his naps were just total so junk bad that day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, younger, you can do that as a short-term strategy. But like as a long-term strategy for you as an adult to say, I didn't get a lot of sleep tonight. I'm not going to get a lot of sleep tomorrow. I'll just catch up on the weekend. Those are just unhealthy habits to be in. And, you know, so I always wonder about the people who are only sleeping 4 and 5 hours. It's like, are you really thriving? You're getting by. You can get by.
I would be a zombie. There's no way. I love my sleep. What about adults napping? What do you think about that?
Again, it depends on the person. Some of us can nap and some of us can't. I can't.
You mean like nap and then still sleep normal?
Right. Or okay. like feel better from a nap, you know, oh. getting a 20 to 30 minute cat nap
yeah.
can be beneficial depending on the timing during the day. You don't want it to fall too close to bedtime because then it can affect your nighttime sleep.
Totally.
And oftentimes those longer naps though, as an adult, you're just kind of messing with, again, it's like you're trying to play catch up, but then that can affect your nighttime sleep.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. Don't they say like 20 minutes is the ideal nap time?
Right.
Anything more, you're just going to be feel out of it. Right.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah. And a few other little tips, quick tips here for like adults and teenagers. You want to make sure your room is dark, 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 especially for adults. We are so sensitive to light. Mm. You know, it's interesting. As infants, I suggest dark, dark cave, like dark room.
Yeah.
Then once you hit about 2.5, 3, 3.5, and the I'm afraid of the dark stuff starts happening.
Oh yeah. Then
we bring a night light, right?
Yes.
Which is fine. Then we use a night light for several years.
Yeah.
But a lot of us then switch back to like, I need a dark space to be able to sleep.
Yes.
You really want the room to be dark, 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 dark.
Yeah.
And then if you are an anxious person, it doesn't usually do you good to have an alarm clock or your phone next to you where you can see the time.
Mm.
So I often suggest to my older kids, turn your clock around so you can't see it. So if you need to rely on the alarm, it's still there, but you can't see the time, or get rid of it. Because when you see it and you're struggling to fall asleep, it can be anxiety inducing. Oh my gosh, I can't fall asleep. And now I'm only going to get 7 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I can't fall asleep. Now it's only 6.
Yeah.
So the last thing is about a bedtime routine. You definitely want to have a routine you do every single night. For kids, order matters. For babies, for toddlers, for preschoolers, order matters. You should do the same thing every single night in the same order. For adults, it doesn't really matter.
Mm.
You can change up your order of things, but what you want to really try to do is that it is a consolidated routine that happens just before you're going to get into bed. Mm. So for example, what I wouldn't want to do is I get on my pajamas, I wash my face, I brush my teeth, I do my whole skincare routine, I go to the bathroom, but then I go sit on my laptop because I have a little bit of work to do before I get into bed.
Mm-hmm.
It confuses the brain that, wait a second, are we getting ready for sleep or is this a working thinking time? I'm not really sure. And as adults, the only things we should be doing in our bed are sleeping and having sex.
Okay.
That's it.
Hello.
Like that's
Wait,
it.
So do you have a TV in your room?
We do not. We have in the past, okay. but we do not.
See, that's what I feel like isn't so important. We have a TV in our bedroom and I feel like that's ruining my sleep because I just stay up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you stay up or even like falling asleep to the TV being on. Some of us.
Yeah, some people love that. I hate that. I won't do that.
That's like their sleep association.
Yeah. That's like their sound machine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh my God. Those are good tips. For me also, I have to shower before I go to bed. And I don't know if that's like, since, you know, you're a baby, you take bath time. I don't know, but anyone that struggles with sleep, I'm like, take a shower, have your body be clean, your feet be clean, no deodorant on. Like, I just feel like it sets your whole mood, and then get in bed.
I agree. I recommend the nightly baths for younger kids.
Yeah.
There is science behind it too, though. You know, you get in the shower, you're in the hot water, you're warm. As soon as you get out, your body starts to cool, and part of your circadian rhythm and what helps you to fall asleep and stay asleep is your core body temperature starting to drop.
Yeah.
And it continues to drop throughout the night. And then around like 4-ish, it starts to increase, and that's what helps to wake us up. So you're kind of helping your body out, you know, your body's starting to cool down and it's helping that core temperature to begin to decrease.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So I love a nightly shower or bath.
Yeah. Oh, these tips have been so good. I feel like we could just talk forever about sleep.
We totally could. I know, we'll have to do a part 2. Like, we'll have to do a part two. We can cover things that we didn't cover this time around.
I would love that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell everyone though, like, if they want to work with you, do you also do virtual or is it just local, and where can they find you?
Yes. So they can find me at My Dreamy Sleeper on Instagram, and my website is mydreamysleeper.com. I primarily help families virtually because I work with parents all over the US and Canada. I've even had parents overseas. Mm. Virtually is just easier. You know, we're more flexible on timing. I can help families just as well. But for local people around the Nashville area, I do also do in-home consultations if that's something that families are interested in.
I love
it. And, yeah.
So what's your website, Instagram?
Yeah. My website is mydreamysleeper.com. And there is an option to schedule a free call if you want to chat. You can email me at hello@mydreamysleeper.com or come find me on Instagram at mydreamysleeper. DM me, follow along. Instagram, I have a love-hate relationship with, but you know.
We all do. We all.
Yeah. But no, come find me and reach out if you need help.
I know, it's like an unnecessary or a necessary evil, I should say.
Right. I know. I'm like, oh shoot, I haven't posted today. What's it going to be?
I know, but you have good tips on there. It's a good follow.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a good follow. Oh my
gosh. Thank you. I try to offer a lot of free advice to parents.
Totally. Yeah. I love that. Well, this is
Sarah. Thank you so much.
I love catching up too.
Me too. Okay. We'll have to do it again.
Yes, for sure. Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye.